give you a little background and some things that may help, may not help. As I said, my name's Larry Richardson, and I am wanting to share a little bit with you, as Lance had mentioned, kind of like what the path of a 67-year-old man has looked like as it kind of weaves in and out between work and life and church. And hopefully you can find some of those examples, some of my experiences, to be helpful for you. I look forward to answering any questions you have. You can pop up and mention them as I'm walking through this, or we can wait to the end, whatever you'd like to do. You know, part of my story is going to, as yours will, as it if it hasn't already, is going to involve quite a bit of struggle, failures, restarts, successes, any number of things. And part of the period of time that you're in right now is to try to really kind of experience those things and to build a base for how you live your life and how you deal with things that come your way, whether it's success, which sometimes can be just as difficult to manage as curveballs. But it is a real reality of living day to day. As I mentioned, I'm 67. Brenda, my wife, and I have been married for 45 years. There are not a lot of us out there, so we're pretty proud of that. We have three kids, grown kids. The two boys, the two oldest, are in the restaurant business with me. My daughter's an interior decorator in Highland Park in Dallas. Have nine grandkids. They all live about 10 minutes from my house, so it is a very active house. And a huge blessing and a lot of fun. I'm very, very grateful for all of that. My mother and father were always in ministry. My dad, I'm a preacher's kid. My dad was a Baptist preacher. My mom supported him and was involved in church work ever since they both graduated Baylor and seminary. So church has been a part of my life from day one. I'm sure you may or may not, one of the most difficult things in life to be is a preacher's kid. And are you a preacher's girl? Good. You know what? My life was pretty good, was really good. And there was never, I felt, and as I look back, anything that being a preacher's kid was detrimental to any opportunity I ever had. And I'm one of the lucky ones because there are some really crazy ones out there that you'll run across. But I'm very thankful for the upbringing I had. Lost my father back in May at 90. My mom's still alive. One of the sweet things happening now is phrases and memories of sermons will pop into my head over the last a few months, and I'm grateful for that. It's pretty cool. And he was a quite a preacher, and so a lot of that is fun to remember. Work, as long as I can remember, I loved to see money. I remember sitting in a fifth grade class, and a young man next to me sat down and had a jar full of money, big old mason jar full of money. And I said, "Where did you get that?" And he said, "I'm from my paper drive." And I said, "Great, I want some of that." And what he didn't tell me is all that money sitting there in the jar, he still had to pay the Dallas Morning News. And so the jar was not near as full after he paid for all his newspapers. But I was hooked at that point in the connection of getting what I thought I wanted with work, and that's been a part of my life forever. Grocery stores, body shops, throwing newspapers, detailing cars, a friend and I from high school had a trailer back in the cowboy boot days, and we used to drive around to state fairs and rodeos and sell cowboy boots. And I had three stores, and that was quite an adventure. As I mentioned, Brenda and I grew up in Denton, and I met Brenda at North Texas State University there, which is now called UNT. I was in a six-year relationship during high school and college, and Brenda wasn't the person I was in a relationship with, but we became friends, and long story short, met a year later after I had ended the relationship, and I was working, and we started dating, and were married in 1980. As I said, we've been married 45 years, and 2 years after we were married, my oldest son Ryan was born. At that time, I was washing cars at a body shop of my best friend from high school, and frustrated that the seven or eight things that I had tried to do since college had all failed and were not producing the life that I thought I would have at that point, or at least headed towards to. There is nothing like the birth of your first son that'll focus you on it's time to get serious and it's time to get settled down. And so I was in an interview process, and the week that Ryan was born, went to work for a group that's no longer around and probably left before y'all were born, called the Black Eyed Pea Restaurants. It was home cooking and here in Dallas. And I got hired and got really serious about work. And God was good, and Brenda was able to stay home and raise Ryan and start our family life, and which, as I look back, is more difficult to happen today. Doesn't happen very often where you're able to do that, but I'm eternally grateful for the time that Brenda was able to spend building our family, being there with our son. It allowed me at that time, which I needed to do, to work 60, 80 hours a week just to get where we needed to be. I was making $18,000 a year, married and with a son. So everything I could do to make that number change was important, and that allowed me to do so. Over the next 4 years, I worked my tail off. The Black Eyed Pea had an unbelievable growth spurt in the through the 80s, got to be involved in probably 26, 28 restaurant openings over that 4 years. And when the ownership, Gene Street and Phil Cobb, sold in 1986, he and I then went to partnership together, and we built a couple of dozen restaurants, nine of which were in Florida, in Orlando, outside of Orlando, where I met Rob Collingsworth and his parents, JB and Shuggy, who are still dear friends of ours. And so we were there for 7 years in Orlando, and life couldn't have been better. And then over a period of about 2 years, my business failed. And it happened quick. Probably should have seen what was happening, mainly too much growth too fast. But it did. And at 40, I was packing up the Volvo, three kids, and moving back from Orlando, Florida to Dallas with a few months in my pocket, and not where I thought I would be at 40. And through God's grace, I was able to get into a new partnership here in Dallas in 1998. And had connections from my time here, and had three restaurants, the gentleman Shannon Wynn that I partnered with, was able to move back and to get started in that capacity. What I do want to tell you is, and I skimmed over this because I don't like remembering it, but this is the point in my story where you realize that life can really suck. And it can suck for everybody at some time. And what's really important is that you figure out how to deal with it and not dwell on it. And you may never be in the restaurant business. You may never have a failure in your life of restaurants going broke. But between personal, spiritual, and professional, there'll be some time in your life where you have struggles and failures, and you've got to start over. And you've got to figure out how to start over. It's just the way it is. I don't know a single person in my world, business-wise, church-wise, friend-wise, that at some point in time in those areas haven't had significant failures and struggles. And it's something that just happens in life. And, you know, y'all have all had stuff that's happened in your life to this point. And the difference in what will happen in the future is that typically it will involve more people that you have responsibility for, which amps up all those kinds of challenges. You just need to know how to deal with it and not dwell on it. From that experience, looking back, what I could offer you is not an answer on how not to have a failure like that or exactly how to deal with that failure. But what was important for me, and I would leave with y'all, is the other, wherever your failure happens, wherever your real struggle happens, it's really important that the other parts of your life are solid. And when I see people that have that type of a situation, a business fail, health issues, whatever else, the individuals and the stories that really go sad, that really go bad, are the ones that don't have other parts of their life that are strong that can help in that particular time. And in my case, I had a solid marriage. It was not perfect. You can ask my wife. It's not today. It wasn't then. But it was solid. And I had enough of a spiritual background and enough of the experience in church and enough of an understanding to know what my faith was, why I was on this earth, enough understanding of who I could turn to, whether that was family, and most often it was my faith. It was God. I'm not a particular person that likes to share troubles with other people. It's just not in my nature. I had to have somewhere to go during that time. I had some way to deal with my depression. And that may be the only time I've had that. And I don't want to use that lightly, because what I experienced from a depression standpoint is nothing what the stories you hear about people that are in deep depressions. I can't tell you, the number on this hand of friends or children of friends who have committed suicide from what real depression is. But in my case, it was just, how did I get to this point? How would I let this happen to my family? You have to figure it out, and you have to deal with that. And whether that's through a counseling situation, whether that's through a faith situation, whether that's a family, you just have to learn how to deal with it. Got in a new partnership, as I mentioned, in Dallas in 1988. Today, we have 36 restaurants, and we did a little over $90 million in sales last year. So good, but we work the business every single day and involved in the business. And it's an important thing to be at that point, still active, at least for me, in the business. How do you balance that type of business, that kind of life, that kind of faith? I don't have an exact answer. In fact, I don't have any idea how to tell you how to do that. But what I can do you is give you some examples of where that's kind of what my, as you can imagine, building 36 restaurants over that period of time is a pretty busy occupation. We have 1,000 employees. which is an opportunity for 1,000 problems every single day. I told Lance that I woke up this morning, I had a restaurant fire in Fort Worth at one of our busiest restaurants. Fortunately, we got it taken care of. It was small and electrical, and fortunately, the restaurant, we had the pest control people there sprayed pest control stuff into an electrical outlet and started a fire. Yet, you never have any idea where things pop up. Fortunately, we had somebody there that grabbed the fire extinguisher and put that out. But there's just always something happening, and so I don't balance. I don't know that I've got the perfect answer for that. So let me tell you how I kind of weave in church, faith, whatever you want to call it. And in my case, it's service, serving. In the hospitality business, which is what I'm in, that comes very natural for me. And so when people ask me, how do you share your faith? How do you disciple? If you're in churches today, there's a lot of talk about discipling, which I think is awesome, but it's an important part of our faith. In my particular case, it has shown itself through serving. And what does that mean? And let me ask y'all, if in the last year, do you have an example of how you have served in terms of your faith? Not actually going out and trying to win someone to Christ, which is perfect, but you have an example of service that's been backed as a part of your faith. Any thoughts? Let me give you mine, and then maybe that'll stir some. In my case, there are probably four main areas where I've been in service. One has been in the church itself, and I'll speak about where I've been fortunate to have positions in our church. I'm a member of Park City's Baptist Church, which is the big church on Northwest Highway with the big steeple there at Preston and Northwest Highway. Brenda and I were actually married there in 1980. My parents were married there in the same chapel years earlier. My grandparents and great-grandmother were there when the church was started, so we've got a long history there. My three kids were also married in the same chapel there at that church, so that's kind of a neat thing. And I just bought two niches in our columbarium for my parents and another two for Brendan at some point in time. So we're what you call invested in Park City's Baptist Church. But in that role, service at the church, I have had opportunities to serve significantly with a church called Cornerstone Baptist Church, which is down on Martin Luther King Boulevard. I've been involved with them for about 20 years, and I'll give you some of the things we've done there. I'm involved with a drug recovery program called Men of Nehemiah, which is also down off Martin Luther King in Irvine. And that's a group that we've been involved with for about 10 or 15 years. And then there are a lot of peripheral churches around there. There at Park City Baptist Church, let me say first before I go through all this, I'm what you call a reluctant servant. I don't think anything I've been involved with that I'll go over, and it sounds like, and I told Lance, this just sounds like me. There's not a single thing on here, and there's not a single service opportunity I've been involved with where I have gone out, woke up one morning, said, I need to be serving, I'm going to go find somewhere to serve. What I will take credit for, and which gives me a great deal of peace, and I tell this to other people when they ask me about the service, is just be open to it. I really believe there's something up here and something in your heart when you are truly open to opportunities and invitations to serve. And as you can imagine, over 20 years of being involved in some of these things that I'll mention in a minute, you have lots of opportunities to see people in service. And there is not a lot of longevity, and you can tell it when people walk in the door. There's not a lot of longevity when people are coming and say, I'm going to serve, and I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to do this. In my case, it's always through an invitation, through an opening, and then you go in there and you become a part of what's going on, and then you find out where you fit in that particular. So I don't think being reluctant to serve is a bad thing. Again, every time I'm asked, my first question is really, how am I going to add that to my day? How am I going to add that to my week? But saying yes and being open to the opportunity, I think is an important thing to do. But I've had the opportunity at our church to chair our missions committee for 6 years, chairman of our deacons, trustee president, involved in pastor search, and in my most important role now is in the nursery. And that's exactly what they do, is they take you right out of trustee deacon leadership and put you right into the nursery. So that's where I serve and am very comfortable. I also think there's a season for service as you're kind of thinking about what your life will be as you go through. In my case, there was a season where it was really busy and a lot of stuff happened, and I'll kind of go over that here in a minute. But I don't think one of the things that I run up against when I'm doing all this is people that are forcing service and are doing whatever they're doing or trying to be a part of whatever we're being. Programs were going on, and it's just not a great fit. And so I think that there has to be a combination of an openness to serve, openness to an invitation, and then it's got to be your right season to do it. I don't think anybody should be out and serving and looking for things to serve when it is in conflict with family life, church life, even work life. Obviously, we're all share that Jesus died for us, he has saved us of our sins, and our responsibility is to tell as many people as we possibly can. That can be different in terms of a service situation where you're putting at detriment other parts of your life. So be careful about that, and be careful of what you're trying to accomplish. But I think there's a season, and in my case, there's never a lightning bolt go off. It's usually a really quiet invitation. It's an invitation to lunch. It's an invitation to, deliver the clothes closet from Park City Baptist Church down to Cornerstone Baptist Church. And where in the world was I going to find an hour to do that? Well, I did, and I'm still there 19 years later. So those are the things that just happen, and I don't think you can force that. Let me go over a little bit this timeline, and some of this I think will make even a little bit more sense. In addition to Cornerstone, Mena Nehemiah, I made a couple of three trips to Cuba through our missions committees. Those have been awesome. Off of the Cuba trips, our translator in Cuba was a gentleman by the name of Raymond. Once we got back and in the church, an opportunity presented itself, and we started a Spanish language service there at our church. Last Sunday, they had 500 people on Sunday morning. Not a thing any of us woke up and said, this has to happen, but through just a whole bunch of different steps, things like that happened. But in 2008, as I mentioned, I was asked to deliver the clothes closet by a guy named Joe Rose. That invitation was only because Joe didn't want to do it. And he had been asked to do it. He didn't want to do it, so he asked me to do it. I met Chris Simmons, the pastor at Cornerstone Baptist Church. And while I was there, he was such a warm individual that I just connected with him, got involved in their homeless feeding. They were actually feeding outside out of a little kitchen on their church property. I started volunteering on that, went back to our church, asked for $15,000. We got a little old building remodeled it, put new equipment in there. Thanksgiving came around and for the homeless feeding, and it was such a chaotic, unbelievable mess that as a restaurant person, I just couldn't believe this is what they were trying to pull off. To them, it was perfectly normal. It was not a problem. To me, it was nothing but chaos. So we remodeled for Thanksgiving. For their regular feeding, we remodeled that building. But on Thanksgiving, the following Thanksgiving, we moved the to-go meals portion to my restaurant. And for 3 years, we did it there at my restaurant. And I began to invite people from the church. And by the third year, we had 300 people showing up on Thursday Thanksgiving morning to build to-go meals that we took down to Cornerstone and handed out to the homeless. That was too many people in our little restaurant. We moved it over to the church. That continued. We'll be in our 18th year this year of providing to-go meals to ministries there at Cornerstone in the neighborhood. We'll do about 2,400 meals on Thanksgiving. And it's all from this one chaotic mess 17, 18 years ago. And then just individually, people would get involved. But let me tell you this. I'm not sure that a single person of that first 325 is still there today that comes and goes. One of the things that I've learned in when I've been in positions is that I personally don't ever get involved in a serve opportunity or a mission opportunity where I'm expecting 10 people to follow me into that. I'm just going because of me. And if anybody else comes, then that's okay. You will burn yourself out if all you're doing is creating opportunities and then expecting a dozen people behind you, really good friends that are patting you on the back and this, that, and the other, or family members. But you don't know what their call is, and you don't know what's on their heart. And so I would encourage you to be very careful about creating stuff with the expectation that everybody else is going to have your bug for that until they just naturally get that. So be very careful about that. As I mentioned, we had 2 Cuba trips. I was asked to chair a program. We had $500,000 on a trust that was given to us. That's how we started the Amigos. In 2011, the homeless feeding had gotten so big, we started raising money for a kitchen, and over 4 years raised money and built a 9,000 square foot building at Cornerstone. And they feed about 5,000 people a week in the South Dallas area out of that building. Debt free, completely raised. There was a gentleman in our church. Thank you. There's a gentleman in our church named Richard Weber, who's probably 94 now. I talked to him 2 days ago. The meanest welder you'd ever meet in your life is in my Sunday school class, and I drug him down 15 years ago to Cornerstone. He was cussing the whole way down there. These people get what they deserve, this, that, and the other. Within 1 year of taking Richard down there, he was knee-deep in the homeless feeding. He connected with the Texas Baptist Men for their shower trailer, and he was manning their shower trailer on the parking lot once a week and giving free showers to the homeless. 2 years after that, we had raised the money and we built a 2,000 square foot shower facility that has 19 showers in it and a clothes closet attached to it. He raised every penny for it, just out of nothing. So that kitchen, the shower and the clothes closet are big parts of things that can happen and happen naturally. Another thing that I would say on all the areas that y'all are talking about doing, through dealing with Cornerstone and other ministries, you don't have any idea what they need. Observation is a really important part of being down there and seeing this. And off the top of my head, they have a bunch of properties down there. We had a tax lawyer from Park City Baptist Church go and get all their taxes taken care of. TxDOT sued the church to take about half their parking lot property. So we had got an attorney to go and be a part of that negotiation. When you get involved with some of these smaller groups, they don't know about insurance. They don't know about banking. They don't know about any of this stuff that so many of us know comes very natural. All they know is about going down there and sharing their faith and building a church. And many of them, Chris Simmons, this pastor at Cornerstone Baptist Church, was just like y'all. He moved from Chicago to Dallas, going to seminary, went to Cornerstone as an intern, and is there 38 years later. So you just have no idea how those can do. But observation is a very, very important thing to be involved with. Reluctant, and I'm going to stop because I see we're getting close. But and I'll have y'all know I rewrote 7 pages of notes last night at 10 o'clock because I threw away everything I had over the last month. But another group, the recovery group I mentioned, Men of Nehemiah. I had spent so many years on missions committee, chairing deacons, trustees, all this kind of stuff. I was done with committees. And then one of my very good friends, in a moment of weakness, his wife asked me if I'd sit on the missions committee as the elder statesman for a year. Well, I spent 3 years on that, but in my reluctance, I was able to secure $250,000 from our church, joyfully, our church gave for the men in Nehemiah, and that was the seed money for their $20 million program they're building in South Dallas now. So you have no idea what God has and can do with whatever when you just say, okay. And Lance, that's not all my life, but that's as much as they need to hear.
Well, right probably now. Not, but that's what we have time. And I want to open up for questions. I'm sitting here. He's not that much my elder, but you know, I've got like 1,000 things, observations just as I'm listening, and truths that have echoed through my own life. So I really appreciate you sharing. So if you have questions about anything that he's talked about, please raise your hand. I want to start off a couple things. One, I don't know how many of y'all were here yesterday for Dr. Sanders for the faculty chapel, but he went through the book of Ruth and just talked about Boaz and some of the things that Larry has brought up has been, man, to me, I'm just seeing Boaz, you know, this principle that Dr. Sanders was sharing yesterday. And so I'm hoping that y'all are paying attention and making the connection between what Scripture was revealing about service, first and foremost, really just being available, right? That as Dr. Sanders pointed out, and as Ms. Richardson brought out here, that they didn't go out looking like, okay, I'm going to go serve God and this is my expertise and I got a mission, I'm going to go do this. No, I mean, they're doing their life being good stewards of the gifts that God has given them, right? Taking care of their families. And then it's like, oh, I'm doing my life and I'm observing. I'm like, oh, who's this lady over here back here? Like, she's new to our field here. Who is this person? Oh, this is, you know, Ruth. And the same thing here, as you'll see, as what I'm listening to with from Larry, is just like, you're just going to church, and all of a sudden, there's a friend that he got himself in a bind. He doesn't really want to do this thing. So it's like, hey, will you cover this for me? And he's like, okay, yeah, let me check it out. You know, but there wasn't some agenda that said, oh, we're going to, you know, build these churches in Cuba, and then we're going to, you know, partner with this church in South Dallas. It's like, no, you just make yourself available, and God is always at work. Always, always, always at work. Even in the things, as Larry talked about in the very beginning, we are all going to go through hard things. I mean, you can't be in this life without getting through hard things. We live in a fallen world, and there's an enemy that wants to hurt us, right? So there's going to be challenges for each of us to have to face. But if you can walk in faith, right, and just be ready and say, okay, Lord, what is your plan for me? I know there are things that I need to do, right? I need to be faithful to my wife. I need to do everything I can to provide for my wife and my children. I want to be quick to share the gospel with others and to live that out, not just in word, but in deed. So how can I serve? And so, and you'll take jobs. You'll say, well, I mean, here you are in college, but I promise you, you know, when I was in high school and college, my jobs, I was working at a restaurant, you know, and fortunately in my case, you know, I worked for a close friend of mine. His family had restaurants. And so I was able to learn a lot just being a busboy and being a waiter about the good and the bad of humanity and about running businesses, right? But I think restaurants are a great place if you want to get into a life of ministry. Restaurants, it's hospitality. I mean, it's under the hospitality industry banner. So you learn what? You learn how to be nice to people. You learn how to serve them and their needs. And so if you have a heart for ministry, I highly commend you while you're young. Man, you make good money in tips. There's flexibility to it. If you get in a good operator that is especially a Christ follower but is ethical, you can learn a lot about life and a lot that would benefit you in ministry. What any kind of questions that you have for Larry as he shared any of his testimony or any points? This is your chance. I'm telling you, this is gold.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you probably project it.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm much more, I hope, at exhibiting that than sitting down and preaching or saying. I mean, we had lots of conversations. I mean, in all reality, and one of my biggest goals during that time is that it'd be as least disruptive to my three kids at that particular time as possible. For them, there was a lot of positiveness because they were going back to grandparents in Dallas. They were going back to lots of family in Dallas. So that was a good thing. But as a part of that, my oldest son, Ryan, was a sophomore in high school. That is not a great time to pull somebody out of school. And so the challenge there for his mom and I was dealing with it once we got back and the challenges that he had. And for 6 months, it were significance. And there's a young man who invited him to a Young Life program 6 months after they're in Highland Park. High School is not one of the easier places to come in because they've all been together for 50 years. And, you know, they grew up together and this, that, and the other. But, yeah, I mean, we had lots of communication and you know, my role and my life is I'll fix it. I fix everything. That's what I do. Well, when you can't fix everything, you got to have something else. And that's where communication and, you know, being honest and open with them is really important. And there are going to be some things in your life that you can't fix. And so you got to figure out what the next step is. Does that help? I have one little thing I'll share. Take 2 minutes. And I'm going to share this because of the age y'all are at, and it's no different than me at 67, but in today's world. So we're fortunate enough, we have a second home out on Lake Cypress Springs, which is out Mount Vernon, and we bought that 15 years ago. It's awesome. It's great. We love the water and skiing and all that kind of stuff. And I bought the lot next to me. A few years later, it came up and I was able to buy that. Well, it was completely overgrown with, just overgrown. Had lots of big trees on it, but completely overgrown. So I went to Home Depot, bought everything orange, you know, saws and knives and chainsaws and all this kind of stuff, and spent about 3 days trying to clear it, and then just hired somebody to clear it because I couldn't make any, it was that thick. I mean, it was briar patch type thick. And what I noticed in that lot was there were these beautiful pine trees, beautiful trees, and then wrapped around them that looked just like the bark itself were these size of your finger, 1 inch, 2 inch vines that were just wrapped around these trees. And in about half of those trees were absolutely dead, and anything green attached to those trees was off this vine. And so we cleared all those vines, he cleared all those vines, got it all spotless. You could play golf on it. It was beautiful. And all these, we took down the trees that weren't any good. And, you know, we'd go out there every other week or whatever it may have been. And my next visit out there, I was out just, you know, manicuring the lawn, whatever that means. And I noticed these little green sprouts at the base of about half the trees. And I said, well, that's kind of neat, you know, green growing up. And then I'd look at some other, a couple weeks later, I'd go out there, and they'd be about 2 feet higher. And not only were they these little greens, they had these little thorns on them. And then I started remembering that all that brush that we cleared out had these huge 2-inch thorns on them that they would hurt. And the application in this minute is that in my life, and I shared this with the addiction group over at Menonimai, in my life that represented to me that little bitty stuff that's pretty and green and new, and how can that possibly hurt me? And over time, that's what sin does in your life. It starts out small. I can manage that. I don't have a problem with that. And before you know it, it's out of control. So I leave you with that. It just be careful of that little stuff. Just be careful of that little stuff. And you sitting in this room are the ones that little stuff is going to go after more than not. Because there is a lion walking these streets, and it's represented by little stuff like that.
Well, and not just in sin, but something else he said earlier too. I loved how he has the freedom to be open to God, but without an agenda. Because, and this is the thing, especially for those that are you that are in pursuing Christian ministry, that are pursuing biblical studies, it's real because of our own hurts and wounds and our family of origin stuff. Like, it's real easy for many of us that are drawn to Christian ministry to be people pleasers, right? And to be drawn to things like, I want to do big things for God, right? Man, and I understand the heart. I've been there. And in many ways, I still am, right? But these little things, right, that says, oh, well, someone else is telling you, well, God wants you to do this and get involved with this ministry and that ministry and that ministry. And next thing you know, all these other things that seem really, really important end up choking you, where you don't have the margin to do the things that really you are supposed to do. right? I mean, to be a successful restaurateur, Larry didn't talk about that part of his life because, man, he's an A-driven guy, right? He knows how to set goals. He sees the problems. He knows how to solve them. And yet he can still walk by faith, not having to have all the answers, not having to have a 50-year plan for his ministry efforts. He holds it very loosely, right? And that's something that I encourage each of you to do with the story that he just shared too, is to recognize that just because it sounds good and it looks like it's pretty and ooh, that's the new thing that the church is doing or that this ministry is doing, you just have to also set it before the Lord with your hand wide open and say, okay, Lord, if you want me to do this, make it open, make it happen. But this ministry isn't going to be on me. At the end of the day, it's on Christ, right? And sometimes when we get into ministry, we start thinking, uh-oh. And God will use circumstances. I know from my own experience, you know, I was a missionary in Spain. To his point earlier, I went with a heart like, the Lord is calling me. He might not be calling anyone else to support me. At the end of the day, he has the cows on 1,000 hills, right? So he owns all the assets. So if he wants to make sure that I stay in Spain doing ministry, he'll make sure there's provision there. I sent letters out. I did all this stuff. None of my friends, none of my family, any one of them are capable of writing a check. And none of them did. And man, and the Lord just allowed me that freedom to experience saying, okay, well then he doesn't want me here doing this right now. Right? He will use the money and the circumstances, your wife, your husband, your children, all these different things to help guide you in your decisions. Right? As long as you're doing it with integrity, you're doing it to pursue Christ and his glory, and you hold back your own stuff, the next thing you know, you're doing something that you never could have imagined. I promise you, 30 years ago, he did not even imagine being involved with homeless ministries. And now you think about the thousands of men that have been impacted because of him and what Park Cities has been doing to help support that ministry. You know, hundreds of lives are being changed. Eternally and also here and now. So thank you for your modeling that for us. Really, really appreciate your time here.